something every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age. And when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, we're living now and we're all in this.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is your storytelling co-host, Fanny Crawford.
And Stash Silkowski.
Your other storytelling co-host. Today, our theme is stories about the little people. But we have some things to share about the past week, don't we, Stash, before
yes.
we actually start
yes, we
telling
do.
stories.
Mm-hmm.
What particular piece did you want to start with?
Well, this past Tuesday, I had one of the best experiences I've ever had as a storyteller in a school. I was at Greenbrier Elementary School in Boonesboro, Maryland, and I was wonderfully received by the principal, by the teachers, and by the three classes. I did three different programs. And the students were normal and well-behaved, which was nice because I mentioned at the beginning of each program that if they felt they were excited about something, it was okay to speak out. If they had questions, it was okay to raise their hand and call out if they needed to before I went on to something else so they wouldn't miss a chance. And they were extremely well-behaved, polite, and very receptive to the program that I was doing with some hands-on stuff. And it was all science, so there were a lot of questions they could ask. And I was just very impressed with the whole school. And it wasn't a show for me. They didn't put on any act. They just were normal.
Well, and what I liked about what I've heard so far over the past few days is how engaged and excited they were about everything you did with them.
They really enjoyed it. I never saw one indication that the kids were not into what I was doing, mm-hmm. and I could have gone on for a couple of hours, really.
I know you could.
Yeah, I had lots of things to work with, and there were some things I didn't get to just because of wanting to make sure I didn't just go by their questions
and
interacted with them. So
we always plan more than we have time
right.
for, don't we?
That's always a good idea. So, okay. And the principal told me at the end of the morning, I started at about 9 and finished a little after 12. She said she was going to ask me back for two more programs.
Whoa. Did you know you were getting in this deep when you first volunteered?
I hoped that they would like it. And she liked the way I told stories. And she wanted me to, she said she was going to arrange time for me to speak, to tell stories to the little ones. So.
That's nice.
Yes, it was very nice. And she and I have talked about a special rocket launching day.
Oh, my.
with water and air-powered rockets that I left instructions for how to build. And it's a real easy thing for the kids to do. And it turns out that their school's kind of nickname is the Rocketeers.
All right. So, that's perfect.
Yeah. So I'm excited to go back. And it was fun.
Good. Okay, well, I guess I'll share about our time yesterday.
Which was wonderful.
Another story session. Mm-hmm. The League of Women Voters of Washington County holds an annual storytelling event, and this was the 9th storytelling event for Washington County's League. And we had two wonderful, wonderful tellers come. Solve Eggers came from Alexandria, Virginia, and she had been telling the day before on Saturday in Culpeper. She did a double session, and she really hadn't been feeling well the week before. Just came back from Italy and was in bed with the flu. But she rallied and got herself to Culpeper. And then while I was biting my fingernails, wondering if she was going to have the stamina to come all the way to Hagerstown after that, she came with bells on, and she was very perky and animated, and I think the audience loved her stories. She told a series of grandma stories. Our theme for this year was conflict and peacemaking, and it's always interesting, you know, what storytellers make of whatever the theme is, because storytellers are very good at making anything fit.
Anything.
The theme, that's right. But Salve did an admirable job of having her family stories fit that theme and talking about her grandmother, who was apparently a very strong personality and a big influence on Salve's life, and how their conflicts were resolved and turned out very well for everyone, including Salve. And then our other teller yesterday, our second teller, was Martha Ruff, who came from Baltimore, Maryland, and she was substituting for Gwen Marrable, who was originally scheduled to appear but has had some serious health issues, although she is in recovery and doing very well. But I'm glad she didn't have to come out and stress herself out more, that Martha Ruff was available to fill in for her. And Martha did some tales from Africa and talked about her time in the Peace Corps in Côte d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast, in Africa, and then about her time in Senegal when she was working there, and all of the kids she met and the adults and the young men who lived with her in as her students when she was in Senegal. She had instruments with her and told a variety of stories, some folk tales, and
engaged the audience very well. She got us to call and response and to even sing a bit.
That's right.
That was fun.
Totally engaged. So it was a lovely day, and we had great refreshments, too, that various volunteers brought, which is always important to me. There must be snacks at storytelling. Mm. But it was overall a good week.
It certainly was.
We had a lot going on.
Yes. There's another one beginning right now.
Okay. I'm going to do a quick station ID, even though technically we're not required to do that yet, but I want you to go right into your story after that, and I'm not sure how long that will take. So I'm just going to let our listeners know that they're listening to enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford, and
Stasi Olkowski.
And if our listeners want to hear past radio shows, or if you want to listen in the future and you can't get to your digital device, your electronic device, right at 12 noon on Mondays. Instead, you can go to the podcast at talltales.enlightenradio.org. And I think I forgot to say at the beginning of the show that today is March 12th, Monday, 2018. And our theme today is stories about the little people. So what's our first story, Stash?
Well, our first story is titled Leprechauns, Wishes, and Gold. And this is a time I wish Andy Offutt Irwin was in the room and I could give him a copy of this so he could help out, because the story involves three little girls.
You're going to have to send him a link to the podcast when it comes up.
And and Andy is so good at doing, when he does Aunt Marguerite and her friends.
Oh, yes.
He's really good at doing different women's voices, and I'm not so good at doing little girls. I could probably manage maybe one, but I will just interpret. So,
okay.
And I'll give you a little background on the story. In 1992, I had a friend who was a Girl Scout leader, and they were having a program where there were going to be about 150 Girl Scouts, and she called me and said, I need a story, and kind of story that a few of the girls could get involved in and do. And I said, oh. And anyway, the event was going to be right around St. Patrick's Day, and she said something about Ireland or, you know. So this friend happened to think that if she mentioned a story, I could just walk around the block and come up with a story. So,
and you did, didn't
well,
you?
Well, I worked on this.
See, it's your own fault.
Unfortunately, I always try to please people. So this is the story. Three little girls meet in the town square and begin their adventure. One of the girls is carrying a blanket, and the other two have flashlights. As they're walking, Maureen said, "We need to go to the fork in the path near the old castle." And Bridget asked, "Why go there?" And Colleen spoke up and said, "Is that where he lives?" Maureen told them, "My Uncle Thomas was talking to some of his friends, and he said that tonight is the perfect time to catch a leprechaun because there's a full moon, and leprechauns like to admire their gold in the moonlight." And right away, Bridget said, "Do they really carry their gold in little pots?" And Colleen spoke up, "Of course they do. They don't have pockets." And Bridget said, "How can we catch a leprechaun?" Maureen looked and said, "Now, how do you know they don't have pockets?" And Colleen said, "You told me." "Oh, that's right," said Maureen. "How can we catch a leprechaun?" Bridget asked. Colleen spoke up and said, "We throw a blanket over his head and say, 'Free or not, and now you're told. We have you caught, so give us your gold.'" "How do you know that will work?" Colleen said, "You told me." "Oh, that's right," said Maureen. And Bridget asked, "But what if he runs?" Colleen immediately said, "We have to hold on to his arms." And Maureen asked, "How do we know that?" Colleen looked at her friend and said, "Common sense." Well, Maureen went on, "My Uncle Thomas says that the leprechauns have to give you the pot of gold or three wishes. And they always try to get you to accept the wishes instead of the gold." So Bridget said, "Okay, here we are. We catch the leprechaun and we'll get three wishes." "That's right," said Colleen. "And we have to be careful because they always try to trick us into wasting the wishes. Isn't that right?" Maureen said. Bridget wanted to know, "What will we wish for?" Colleen said, "Gold, lots of gold." And Maureen spoke up again and said, "We'll decide on our wishes after we catch the leprechaun." "Oh, there's the fork in the road ahead. Shh, I hear someone coming. Quick, get the blanket ready and hide." Well, down the path comes Patrick Aloysius, Michael Sean O'Casey himself. And he's singing a happy tune. "Ah, 'tis a lovely full moon, it makes me heart so bold, it makes me sing and croon about me pot of gold. 70 pieces and more shine in the yellow moonlight, I'll spread them on the forest floor and sing and dance all night." The girls creep up behind Patrick Aloysius, Michael Sean O'Casey himself, and throw the blanket over his head. Bridget and Colleen grab his arms. He struggles. The girls all say, "Free you're not, and now you're told. We have you caught, so give us your gold." Oh, and the leprechaun. "Oh, Casey. Oh, my, oh, my. Yes, you have me fair and square. Well, me darlings, remove the blanket, please, and make your wishes, and I will grant them sure." And Maureen said right away, "Don't listen to him. Just hold on tight." Bridget, "Let's wish for gold." Colleen, "Yes, wish for gold." And Maureen said, "Just wait. I'll take the blanket off, but you two hold him tight." "Well, lassies, if it's gold you want, it's gold you shall wish for, and we'll see what Patrick Aloysius Michael Sean O'Casey himself can do for you. If we wish for gold, will you give it to us right away? Do we get the pot that it's in? If it's heavy, can you deliver it to our house?" And the leprechaun, obviously looking for some sympathy, "Well, now, me fair Colleens, I can't answer that all at once, can I? I'm not quite sure how to answer you. I'm very tired. It's not easy being a leprechaun, even for Patrick Aloysius Michael Sean O'Casey himself. It's not an easy job to grant wishes. Everyone wants something. My wife is always asking for things, and the little ones never run out of ideas for things they want. And, of course, there's Grandma. She can't remember what she wishes for and blames me for giving her the wrong thing. Ah, 'tis a hard life I lead. People always trying to catch me, wanting me gold. I had to work hard as a lad to get the colt, and it's a terrible strain always trying to protect it. I'm always tired and have to always be on me guard, and some of the way people try to catch me, ropes and traps and blankets and such. And the bruises, you two are holding me a bit tight, you know. My clothes are a mess, and I can't go for a walk of an evening without that worry that I'll be kidnapped. And there's me dancing. Everyone knows a leprechaun has the need to dance. I'm out here to dance in the moonlight, and what happens? I'm detained by you three, and Bridget looks at Colleen and says, I wish you would be quiet. The leprechaun stops talking. Maureen says, go on. What were you saying about your dancing and us? Bridget says, oh no, I wished he would stop talking. And Maureen says, I wish you hadn't done that. Oh no. Now you made another wish. Maureen, don't say anything else. Okay, I won't. Colleen, yes, don't speak. We have only one wish left. Of course. The leprechaun is standing with a big smile. Maureen says, where's your pot of gold? Oh, Casey, may I talk now? Bridget says, yes. The leprechaun points, over there. He points to a pot of gold sitting a few yards away. The three girls are all talking in hushed tones, put their heads together, and finally Maureen says, here's our wish. We wish for three pots exactly like that one. Okay, he says, and so you shall have them. Let me arms loose and it's done. Sure as me name's Patrick Aloysius Michael Sean O'Casey himself. Colleen said, you'll run away. No, I won't. I'll grant your wish and then I'll be gone. Maureen says, okay, let him go. So the girls let the leprechaun go. He walks to his pot of gold, picks it up, turns and walks back, and hands the girls each a pot exactly like his. Here you are, lassies. Three pots exactly like mine. But I'm so surprised you did not wish for the gold, too. But the pots are very nice. And off he dances into the night.
I didn't see that coming. That's good. So you're an Irishman now, are you?
I have no idea. I can't wait to listen to the broadcast and
see how if you're close. An Irishman. Okay. That was Stasz Silkowski telling the story Leprechaun's Wishes in Gold in honor of our theme today, stories about little people. I do like that story, and I'm pleased that it's an original story, and I will have to take some time to get used to you being Irish. This is new. This is new for me. Do you want to talk about Speak?
Yes. This is an appropriate time to mention, Speak. I thought we were going to say something about stories in a realm.
Well, I'll do that, let's just speak first.
About Speak stories. We have a great lineup coming up. In fact, this week is so full of storytelling for this week and next week. The first session of Speak Story Series, March 20th, will have Elizabeth Ellis. And she's the grand dame of storytelling in the United States and has been telling stories for 40 years. Also, you won't be there this weekend.
No.
But this weekend,
I'll be there in spirit.
Right.
While I'm taking a nap on Saturday.
This Saturday and Sunday, the 17th and 18th, there will be a small group of professional storytellers meeting with Elizabeth Ellis for a workshop. And I'm really looking forward to that because it'll be a wonderful thing. And I have a great deal of fondness for Elizabeth. On March 21st, the day after Speak Story Series with Elizabeth Ellis, in the evening at Shepherd University, there will be a workshop for a few hours open to the public. And people may register for that by contacting the speakstoryseries.com and online, and they can register ahead of time. and that will be to help people with family stories. In April, the storyteller for the April 10th program at Speak Story Series is Motoko, and she is a member of the Circle of Excellence of the National Storytelling Network and has studied mime and is going to be telling you some comical tales from Japan. May 8th, Robert Kikuchi in Gojo, one half of the group called Ethnotech, which performs all over the country, and he will be on his own that night, and he's going to be doing a program called Between Shadow and Light, Wisdom and Woe. June 12th, from Chicago, Scott Whitehair, who will be doing personal stories, and he's one of the younger storytellers on the national tour. July 10th, Dovey Thomason. And Dovey is a Native American storyteller and another one of the storytellers who has been on the circuit for a long time and who is revered as a storyteller. August 14th, Corrine Stavish. And I lost my notes. Can you say something about Corrine?
Sure.
She's a nice lady.
She was very impressive at Jonesboro last year. She is, I think, this time at Speak, she'll be telling the same story she told there, which is the story of the Danish resistance in World War II and how they rescued and smuggled out of the country thousands of Jewish Danes who needed rescuing.
Thanks.
it is a great story.
Yes. And September 11th, Donald Davis, on the other side of the gender coin, Donald is the grand old man of storytelling in America, although I know that he's not the oldest storyteller. He's not even as old as I am.
Well, there you have it.
How about that? And that's September 11th, and I guarantee that whoever shows up for that will have a wonderful time. October 9th is Linda Gorham. Go ahead.
Well, Linda, I've seen a couple times at Jonesboro. I've never seen her at a house concert or anything like that. But she, on the big stage, she's wonderful, very dynamic and elegant woman. Yes. As well, and tells a lot of African-American and Caribbean tales and stories direct from Africa. And I think she's going to tell a variety of.
And on November 13th, the series will wind up with Megan Wells. And I know we both saw her last year at Jonesboro.
Mm-hmm.
And she was wonderful and spellbinding. My memory of her at Jonesboro was that when she finished, I was setting my seat hoping that she would just keep going on. So there's a great lineup for Speak Story Series this year.
Yeah.
And you can contact them at speakstoryseries.com and get more information and more details.
Very good. And those are generally on campus at Shepherd University.
Right.
So we're listening. You are listening. I'm listening too, but you, our listeners, are listening to the Enlightened Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. And I always like to repeat the podcast URL as well, talltales.enlightenradio.org, so that people can listen if they're not available to hear us right at 12 noon on Monday afternoon. Shall I do my story? I'm going to do this in two parts. I think it's a two-parter.
Okay.
And Stosh has been telling us leprechaun stories for our theme today. But in my family, if someone talked about the little people, that would most likely refer to my brother Dougie's imaginary friends, Jep and Dank. And some of you have heard the origin story of Jep and Dank and how they came to live under my brother's bed in our house in Philadelphia, how they got me in big trouble, and how I got us all out again. But in case you ever wondered if that story was the beginning and end of Jep and Dank, the answer would be a definite no. So here's another installment of the wild adventure that was my childhood with Jep and Dank. Every summer, from the time I was 7 years old, I went to camp, and it was always the same camp, College Settlement Farm Camp, run by Quakers, or the Philadelphia Society of Friends. The camp was located an hour and a half by car from Philadelphia along Whitmer Road, just outside Horsham, PA. Now, the summer I turned 11, my little brother Dougie was 6, and he came to camp for the first time. By then, I was spending a full 8 weeks at camp each year, only coming home in time to go on our family vacation for 10 days at the end of August. School started just after Labor Day in those days. And Dougie's first year at camp was for just a week, the last camp session of the summer. The plan was that we'd go home together on the camp bus with our suitcases and our duffel bags and the collections of butterflies and bugs and tadpoles that I always carried in tin cans on my lap on the bus to the Queen Street Friends Settlement Office, where my dad always dropped me off to take the bus to camp and then came back to collect me at the end each year. And everything would be the same this particular year, except that Dougie came up on the Queen Street bus after I'd already been there for 7 weeks, so we would go home together. Now, I was standing there with all the other summer-long stayover kids when the buses came rolling in from Queen Street in Philadelphia, and there was Dougie on the bus in a window seat waving at me. He had to wait till his counselor got off the bus. Now, his counselor was Dell, who always had the newest, youngest boy campers. Dell was okay. He was a bit weird, but generally short-tempered and sarcastic. But I liked him because he was a smart guy. He was no idiot for a counselor anyway. And he'd been coming to camp almost as long as I had. So he didn't make any stupid rookie counselor mistakes like some people I could name. But that's a whole other story. Now, once Dell had herded his 8 boys off the bus that were assigned to him and corralled them in one corner of the lawn between the camp office and the bus parking lot, he set his foot on the big long log that marked the edge of the parking lot. He arranged his clipboard on his bent knee and rummaged in his shirt pockets for a pen. Now, I came over to give my little brother a welcoming hug, but Dougie was very agitated. He had something to tell me. He grabbed me by the arm and pulled me away from Dell's group and whispered, "Jep and Dank are here at camp. They somehow were in the trunk of Daddy's car, and they got into the suitcase place on the bottom of the bus in that, you know, where the little door opens and all the suitcases go in. They're in there. You have to help me because I want to make sure they come home with us at the end of the week." Oh, I stared at Dougie, shocked to silence. It was one thing to have Jep and Dank living under Doug's bed at home in his own room. How was this going to work out here in the country with Dougie sharing a bunkhouse with 7 other 6- and 7-year-old boys? Back in Philadelphia, Jep and Dank had once led me on a wild goose chase 6 blocks from our house to the Philadelphia Zoo in the middle of the night till I found a way to capture them and get them home again. I did not want to relive that experience. Doug's counselor, Dell, was taking roll call, and I came out of my stupor to hear, probably for the third time, "Crawford! Doug Crawford! Lord, have a duck! Pipe down, you boys! Are you here? For Cincinnati's sake, Doug Crawford! I saw you on the blessed bus. Where are you now?" Dell was famous among campers for his colorful language and exasperated tone of voice. right this minute, Dell was trying to figure out how he had lost Doug Crawford off a moving bus between Queen Street and Philadelphia and the camp office here on Whitmer Road. I gave Dougie a nudge. Well, a shove, okay. I was a bit exasperated myself at the thought of Jep and Dank wandering unleashed and unsupervised around College Settlement farm camp, possibly in plain sight of impressionable 6- and 7-year-olds, or worse, in front of testy, baggy-eyed counselors on their 8th week at camp, with home or Atlantic City Beach on their minds, just a week or so away. I pushed Dougie towards the rest of his bunk, and once he was reunited with Dell uttering a few choice mumbled words for which I did not know the definitions but had heard once or twice before, either from Dell himself or wafting out the door of the tavern across the street from Vishnevsky's corner store back in Philadelphia, where my mother sent me for milk or cottage cheese occasionally, always saying, "Walk on the other side of the street from the tavern." Well, Dell lined up his boys and started them moving toward their bunkhouse on the other side of Whitmer Road, and Dougie turned around and waved, walking backwards, his face tense and twisted. I knew he was worried about Jep and Dank. Well, I was worried about Jep and Dank. I waved back, and the boys disappeared into the trees, the shortcut to their bunkhouse. I was not a happy camper just then. The first step would be to figure out if Dougie's imaginary friends were still in the luggage compartment under the camp bus and what to do with them once I knew where they were. Doug's bunkhouse and mine, Girls Bunk 10, were about equally distant from the camp office and the bus parking lot. And my counselor, Karen, was gathering her brood, now a diverse group of old and new campers, 10 and 11-year-old girls like me. I liked Karen a lot, but more important, I knew she would notice if I tried to slip away to peer into bus compartments or otherwise stray from our approved afternoon activities. Right now, it was time to get to the greetings, the introductions, and basic camp rules talk over with so we could move on to lunch in the dining room, archery, and then swimming, and then supper, and first night of the last session, movie night, also in the dining room. Well, there were 4 old campers in bunk 10 now, including me, and 4 new girls. And my best friend this year, and for the past 3 years at least, was Marion McLean, another 4-year, well, I was 5-year, but she was a 4-year camp veteran. She was tall, lean, and freckle-faced, did not talk much, and had absolutely no patience for silliness or boy talk. She also had a slightly manic 8-year-old little sister in the bunkhouse with the youngest girl campers. And the only unruly thing about Marion was her short, wiry, slightly wild red hair. The rest of her was all business, by which she generally meant books and camp sports. And we talked about those. But we also spent a lot of time just silently observing the adults and kids around us, locking eyes whenever we noticed something that proved a point or otherwise justified a previously expressed opinion, or I'll be honest here, a prejudice. We had noticed, for instance, Dell's creative and inspired language. Marion was a devout Catholic, and she called it blasphemous. I didn't disagree. I was only half certain I knew what that meant. But I was pretty sure that Marion, like me, wrote down some of the more interesting things we heard Dell say. I hope to include some of his words and phrases in letters to friends and family someday. Marion, on the other hand, might have wanted to report some of the words to a priest or include them in an accounting to His Holiness the Pope. As the new girls were stowing their gear under beds, in drawers, and so on, Karen led the greetings, the introductions, and the basic rules talk, and we finished just as the PA system let loose with the blare of brass announcing lunch. The rest of the day flew by quickly, and by lights out, as the sound of taps bugled out, announcing lights out, I had pretty much decided there was no point in including Marion in my plans for checking on Jep and Dank. She would have argued against it. In fact, she would have argued against the very possibility of imaginary friends. She just wasn't a good candidate for that kind of experience. So I didn't tell her. Karen turned out the lights, went into the counselor's room, and closed the door. I waited till I could hear the snores and deep breathing of my bunkmates, and then waited some more till the light under Karen's door went out. When everything was quiet and steady, I crept out of bed in my PJs, grabbed my sweatshirt and flip-flops, usually reserved just for the shower or swimming area at the lake, and tiptoed out the door of bunk 10. I crossed the wet grass, headed for the bus parking lot, trying to stay in the shadows and out of the few lights that stayed lit all night on the front of every bunk's cabin. There was not much of a moon that night. It was shrouded in clouds, so I couldn't even tell what phase the moon was in. I could hear crickets and the occasional hoot of an owl close by. Otherwise, it was quiet. As I came to the edge of the parking lot and was passing the utility shed where maintenance Rick and maintenance Susan stored the tractor and tools they used for taking care of the campus lawns and other responsibilities they had, I slowed down to take a look around. I could just make out the silhouettes of the two camp buses parked to the side of the camp office. I wanted to check the luggage compartment of the Queen Street bus to see if Jep and Dank were still there. As I started forward again, I heard a and the far side of the buses lit up. I froze and pressed against the side of the utility shed. A voice said, "Well, there's nothing here now." And the light of a flashlight moved along the far side of the Queen Street bus and then stopped. "Holy Mount Holyoke, look," said the same voice. It sounded like Dell. Karen, my counselor, was a college student, a senior at Mount Holyoke College in Massachusetts. It had to be Dell. Dell spent a lot of time teasing Karen, often about me. He often said I'd been at College Settlement Farm Camp so long, I knew more about running Girls Bunk 10 than she did. "What?" said another voice. "The luggage compartment's open. It's empty. It could have popped open itself or not been closed all the way to start with. Open the main door and we'll check inside around the seats. Just make sure there's no varmints, campers, out and about." That shocked me. The idea that he thought there might be wandering campers out in the middle of the night. What kind of an insane idea was that? I'd been coming to camp 5 years and had never heard of a camper out in the middle of the night. Stupid counselors. Something touched the back of my head. I jumped a foot in the air, sideways, just to be on the safe side, and turned to hear Marion say in an urgent whisper, "What the heck do you think you're doing? Are you crazy? Trying to get us both thrown out of camp? I do not want Mr. Ferguson," the camp director, "to call my mother and send me home in disgrace. Come on, you're going back to bed." She grabbed me by the pajama collar. I wiggled loose, my heart pounding, and whispered, "What are you doing? I didn't ask you to follow me. Go back to bed yourself." "Shh! Dell and Rick are on the other side of that bus. Then explain to me very quietly, you idiot. What are you doing out here?" I said nothing. I couldn't think of a single thing to say that would make any sense to Marion. If I started talking about imaginary friends, she would know I was crazy, yell for help, and insist I be taken to Nurse BJ in the camp infirmary. It was then a small voice near my ankle said, very quietly, "Hi, we're very, very hungry. Did you bring us our dinner?" I dropped to my knees, peering closely at the crawl space under the utility shed. Marion let go of my pajamas and peered under there with me. "Imps!" she shouted in a hoarse whisper. There were Jep and Dank huddled together in the 18-inch space between the floor of the utility shed and the bare earth. I had never seen them with such pathetic, sad faces. I reached into the space, intending to pull them out of there. Marion grabbed my hand. Satanic imps! We need to find a silver dagger, or at least a silver hat pin. They're small imps. Even a silver brooch pin might be enough to pierce the heart. What? I croaked. No! You mean like killing a vampire? No. They belong to my little brother, or my uncle, really. From when he was a little boy in Brooklyn. My mother told me about them. I could see Marion's furrowed brow in the dim light moving about in the bus on the other side of the parking lot. She stared at me, trying to make sense of what I was saying. I could tell she wasn't having much luck with that. Your mother? I'm going to stop here.
Okay.
And do part two in just a minute.
All right. And so now I think we should hear about stories
in the round. We should indeed. Okay. So the first session of Stories in the Round starts this month, March 26th, which would be the fourth Monday, per usual. And we have a special treat for our audience at Stories in the Round. Stash and I will be performing the two-person play Love Letters by A.R. Gurney. We had such a great response in December from doing Mark Twain's Adam and Eve that we felt encouraged to go on and do a second two-person play. So we've been in rehearsals. And if you want more information and want to come to that first session, you can email me, Fanitsky, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at hotmail.com, or you can call me at 301-730-1638. Tickets are $10 in advance or $12 at the door, and that's at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown, 13245 Sear Foss Pike, about a mile west of the 81 Exchange on Route 58. And, I should also let you know that we have season's tickets available. $80 for 10 sessions, because, of course, we've added March this year. So we're going March through December. In April, Susan Gordon will be sharing some brand new stories that she has been working on. Some of them are about animals, some of them are about family, but that's also the fourth Monday of the month. That would be April 23rd. And then in May, we have Kevin Cordy coming to Stories in the Round for the first time. And I am really thrilled to be hearing him. We tried to get him here last year, and he's such a busy guy, traveling all over the country, storytelling, and he teaches as well. So we couldn't make it work last year, but we made sure we got him on the calendar for this time. And any minute now, it'll probably be another week, I'll have Kevin Cordy's information up on Facebook, so you'll be able to hear more about Dr. Kevin Cordy and what he'll be doing on May 28th, which is Memorial Day, the last day of Memorial Day weekend. But so it's a good day. Most people are off work that day, and you can come hear Kevin Cordy at Stories in the Round. And then in June, Andy Offit Irwin, drum roll, please, returns to Stories in the Round for his second appearance with us. And we're really looking forward to that. My other storytellers for the rest of the series are not confirmed yet, so I'm going to stop there. I hope by next week I have more to tell our listeners.
Good. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
I'm just going to mention that Andy will not be on the fourth Monday.
That's right.
He'll be there June 18th.
He's doing a lot of stuff in the region, and so
yes,
we had to make that work for him. Right. And we are happy to do that. And by the way, I think I forgot to say that our introductory music, many times on stories on enlightenradio.org, the storytelling hour, is often Andy's Terry Here, and it certainly was today. So yes. I should have said that. And thanks to Andy for giving us permission for that. I'm going to continue.
So, are you ready to go
with part two? Yes.
I've been waiting.
Okay. So, Marion has just said, in response to my telling her that these were not imps, satanic imps, they are my brother's imaginary friends that I have heard all about from my mother and have had some experiences myself. Your mother?
Yes. Uncle Hank had two little imaginary friends who lived under his bed. Somehow they showed up under Doug's bed at home, and they followed him here in the luggage compartment on the Queen Street bus. I've met them before. We went to the zoo together. They're not satanic. They're a lot of trouble, and they're very annoying, but they're not satanic.
You went to the zoo? They belong in the zoo. How do you know they're not imps? They certainly look it. Look at those filthy loincloths and their hair sticking straight up in the air. Look at those dirty fingernails, and look at their feet. I had to admit, they were pretty scruffy. But Satan's spawn? Imaginary children were one thing. This was a Quaker camp, for heaven's sake. And I wasn't raised in my family. We didn't consider satanic forces a plausible threat to world peace and prosperity. Maybe Senator Joe McCarthy, maybe. But even he wouldn't be bold enough to operate within the campus of a Quaker settlement camp. And Marion, those aren't loincloths. They're just very dirty fruit of the looms. I'll prove it to you. Does Satan eat ice cream? Or his minions, do they eat ice cream? Of course not, said Marion with righteous indignation. Well, these boys love ice cream. Watch. Jep! Dank! I know where there's some Breyer's ice cream. Follow me! And they did.
Ice cream? We love ice cream!
said Jep. And Dank actually started to drool, his small dirty hands smearing more dirt across his face. Marion, of course, knew where I was headed, the dining room freezers. No matter where the ice cream was served, camp veterans knew that it always originated from the dining hall freezers. Now, if Marion had not been with me, I'm not sure my plan would have worked. I had seen in which freezers the ice cream was stored, but the outside locks on the dining room doors were tricky. The adult members of Horsham Friends Meeting were generous and kind-hearted souls, but they were rarely gullible and never, in my experience, guilty of lassitude or complacency. The doors were bolted shut. But Marion's mother was a heating and circulation systems person at City Hall in Philadelphia. Marion knew what an exhaust vent was. I did too, but I didn't know I knew, and I certainly would not have made the connection to our current situation. With her Swiss Army knife, Marion had the outside vent covers off in a flash, and we crawled through the ductwork till we reached the kitchen, unscrewed the inside vent covers on the ceiling over top of the refrigerator units, new stainless steel, and climbed down to the floor and absconded with a 5-gallon bucket of Neapolitan ice cream. I also grabbed some of those flat wooden spoons that they make for Dixie cups, if you remember those. Now, it was not easy angling a 5-gallon bucket back through the ductwork, and by the time we finished, the sky was brightening a bit. I had a thought.
Marion, we're going to need some rope. They might not be entirely amenable to my plan, Jep and Dank.
Marion raised her eyebrows, but said only, I'll get the clothesline from behind bunk 10. And I headed for the Colonial Spring House behind Mr. Ferguson's house, the camp director. When Marion got back, we tied up Jep and Dank, with their dirty feet tied only at the ankles. And when we opened the ice cream for them and put the flat wooden Dixie cup spoons between their big and second toes, because their hands were tied tightly, I began to see Marion's point about their resemblance to imps. Jep was the first to get a small spoonful. on his flat wooden spoon from his toes into his mouth. But within a minute, both Jep and Ankh were deftly scooping Neapolitan into their mouths using only the small wooden spoons held between their toes. Marion and I watched in a sort of shocked coma till we noticed the first rays of sun peeking up over the horizon. We bolted from the spring house door and raced back to bunk 10, crept inside and into our camp cots, pulling the blankets up to our chins, just as Karen opened the door from the little counselor's room and shouted, "Rise and shine, girls!" There's more to that story about how I actually get Jep and Ankh back home, but that's all we have time for today.
Right. I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of it.
You're not exhausted?
No, not at all. Not at all. And I'm glad you're watching the time, but we do have about 12 minutes left.
Okay.
So...
And I think you have something to fill.
Yes.
Most of that 12 minutes, if I remember our earlier conversation.
The little people. What I like to do is give a version of the famous tale of the elves and the shoemaker that was collected by the Grimm brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many versions of this, but. I think this is maybe considered the classical version. It's once there was an elderly shoemaker and his wife who were on hard times. For some reason, even though he was a wonderful shoemaker, his shoes had not been selling well, and he could not get the prices that he really would like to have gotten for them. And they were at a point where he had only enough leather to make one more pair of shoes. And he didn't know what he would do after that, but he was determined to make another beautiful pair of shoes. And he set out the leather and his tools, but he was very tired. It had been a long day, and so he and his wife went to bed, and he was determined to get up in the morning and make one more pair of shoes and see if he couldn't sell it for more than he usually got. Well, in the morning, when he got up and went into his little corner where he did his work at his workbench, he found an amazing thing, the most beautiful pair of shoes he had seen in many years. The stitching was perfect. The leather was all kind of brushed and looked just divine. Well, he opened the door to his shop and set those shoes right outside on a little display stand. And in no time at all, he had some people looking at them, and there was almost a bidding war to get those shoes. He sold them at a fair price, but better than he had been getting for shoes, and took the money in, told his wife, and said, I have enough now. I can get some more leather. And he did. He went to the shop. He bought some leather, enough to do two more pair of shoes. That evening, he set out his tools and the new leather he had gotten, and told his wife, early in the morning, I'll be up before daylight and I'm going to make some more shoes. Well, he didn't even know where those first shoes had come from. But he thought to himself, I'm not going to worry about my luck. If it's there, it's there. He got up in the morning, and he was determined to make two more pair of shoes, because during the last night, he had fallen asleep thinking that maybe because he was so tired and worn out that he had made those shoes kind of in a dreamlike state. he walked into his little corner shop, and there were two pair of shoes. He couldn't believe it. Maybe it happened again. Maybe he was sleepwalking. Anyway, he set them outside, and sure enough, they were sold at an even better price than the single pair the day before. This went on again. That day he went, bought some more leather, cut it out in the shapes that he wanted, set it on his bench, and went to sleep, aiming to get up early. When he woke up in the morning, there were four pair of shoes. He sold them. And that night, when he talked to his wife, he said, "I think something's going on. I don't think I'm the one making the shoes." So they pretended to go to bed, and then they hid and watched the shop. Well, near midnight, two little people showed up. Two elves. They weren't even dressed. They had no clothes at all. And they went right to work with the new leather and made eight pairs of beautiful shoes. Well, the next day, the shoemaker and his wife determined that they would do something for the little elves. His wife was a very good seamstress. He took some of the money from the sale of the shoes, and she went to the shop and bought some really nice material. She worked all day and made two beautiful little suits, trousers and a vest and a jacket and even two caps. And that night, they sat up late, watched, and when the two elves came in, they were so happy. They saw the clothes. They put the clothes on. They made one last batch of shoes and danced off into the night, never to be seen again. Because of the elves' great help, the shoemaker was off on a new career of making his shoes. His business thrived, and the little people were thrilled because the generous clothes that were made by the shoemaker's wife. And that's the grim story of the elves and the shoemaker.
With the message that you, yes, if you treat the little people well, they, yes, will treat you
they
well.
They will treat you well.
Good
just,
story.
Just don't try to trick them out of their cold.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, I think it's about time to close. Any last announcements we need to make?
St. Patrick's Day is next Saturday.
Yeah.
I don't celebrate St. Patrick's Day, but I just...
Well, now that you're an honorary Irishman, I think you might.
Maybe I'll have a drink in his honor. So would you like to do the closing?
Sure, unless you would like to. I did the opening.
Okay,
it seems only fair that you do the closing.
We are so polite to each other.
That's another story. We heard that story yesterday, didn't we?
Yes. This is Stasi Olkowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your co-hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. Closing out this week's show, the Epic Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening.
See you next week.
See you next week. And coming up next is
Jazz Ladies.
Jazz.
Jazz Ladies.
Jazz Ladies. That's even better.
Bye.